It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
When you think of Las Vegas, one topic remains in the top three spots. That's food. There's been a culinary revolution in Las Vegas over the last 25 years here. Now there's another bonus to living in Las Vegas, thanks to my guests, Chef Alicia Chevatone and librarian Dr. Nicole Beer. They're launching America's first cookbook lending library in Las Vegas on August 2nd. The library will be located inside Palette Las Vegas in downtown Las Vegas. Some of the donated cookbooks are from several of Las Vegas's most notable chefs and restaurateurs, including Emeril Lagasse, Lorena Garcia, Karis Kawana, and more. And so for everything about the cookbook lending library, go to nicenicebite.com and follow them on Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Alicia and Nicole, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ira.
Thank you.
Yeah, what's cooking?
We are curating. We are getting ready to launch Nice Bite, the first public cookbook lending library in America, possibly the world. So we are breaking ground here.
Yeah, I like the idea. So, and it's located in Palette, which is in downtown Las Vegas, right?
Yes, it's in the Arts District. So it's a really hot new restaurant right on the corner of Main and Colorado, right around the corner from 1228, if you're familiar, really hot area. And the folks at Palette are very, very gracious, and they've donated the space for us. They've got gorgeous shelving already built in and ready to go. And so we're launching on August 2nd.
Well, this will be interesting, too, because a lot of our listeners and viewers are from out of Las Vegas as well. So when they come to Las Vegas, they can come by and check out the books and get something to eat as well. So that's always good, too. Now, whose idea was it? I hear differing versions of this. So I'm going to let the two of you fight it out right here on camera and on front of the microphone and tell me whose idea was.
It was my idea. I was drinking wine with my husband late one night, and Nicole was on vacation and she was in Vietnam. And I texted her, not knowing what the time zone difference was. She was asleep. She just wouldn't respond. And I texted her because she is my very smart EDD librarian friend. And I figured if anybody would know if there was such a thing as a cookbook library, she would know. And after a little bit of banter back and forth, she said, no, I don't think this exists. And I said, I'm going to start it. And I said, you want to curate it for me and do this with me? And she said, yeah. So there we went.
So from there, you had to do two things, get a location, but also to reach out to many of your friends who are chefs and others to get cookbooks donated and be able to have that inventory. And as you say, to have Nicole curate it. And I'm going to get to Nicole in just a second, but was it relatively easy for you to reach out and get those books?
I attribute, 30 years in business and, a lot of business development and marketing to my fearlessness. So I actually had no problem locating PR contacts and just reaching out cold to even a lot of chefs that I don't know that are, really, really big, celebrity chefs. And the response has been, by and large, tremendous. It hasn't been difficult at all. Also, a lot of foundations are starting to get behind us now. We've got a meeting on July 22nd with the Julia Child Foundation. The James Beard Foundation has responded. Several members of their board have responded. Also, Jacques Pepin's Foundation. A lot of these chefs and, larger entities are really into, scholarships, grants, giving millions of dollars to deserving chefs and entrepreneurs, culinary enthusiasts, nationwide, and really rewarding, people who are doing great stuff. And so I was shocked, but also not necessarily completely surprised that they're getting behind us as well. So that's been really, really great.
So you are brazen and shameless.
Yes. 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 Yeah, I have a t-shirt that says that.
And Nicole, you're her friend. So you obviously admire those traits and you wanted to get involved. And how do you curate cookbooks? Do you do it by cuisine? Do you do it by how it approaches to cooking? How do you do that from your background as a librarian?
Well, good question, Ira. Part of this is 3 years ago, I started the first, and there are now two, but I was the first cookbook pop-up market. And so I do pop-ups all over town. I've done a couple in California. So 3 years ago, I took the loves of my life, which are cooking and books. And again, 25 years as a librarian. And so I had some market knowledge, right, in terms of what people were buying here, at least locally, what cookbooks had been successful, what ones hadn't been as successful. So I kind of had a little bit of knowledge going into this, what I thought a good collection and what that curation. So I kind of modeled the curating of palette and going forward, what we will do. And obviously we can create custom curation and libraries depending on the location. And so I just kind of did that, how I've built my stock for Lentils in the Pot, which is my cookbook pop-up. So the idea, of course, was amazing. But what I immediately knew I was going to be tasked with is, how are we going to get a circulation system that is going to have data for us, finding out what cookbooks are checked out? No one nowadays is going to take out a card and sign their name and have a stamp. We're just way past that. And so I was able to find a system that's going to work really well for folks. Our patrons are going to be able to sign up, a one-time sign up. They don't have to download an app. Going to have a QR code in the book, and I've got it down to about 25 seconds to check out each book, and I've only checked out a few. I haven't been practicing this diligently, you know, and my time off in the summer, just keep checking out books over and over to get my times down. But at any rate, yeah, and so it's working beautifully. And we want to take this on the road. We want to curate collections and cookbook libraries all over the world.
Well, what is the, I was going to ask you something else, but you intrigued me with the procedural aspect. I was going to get into that later, yes. But since you're already into it, what is the determination of when you have to bring the cookbook back? In other words, is it 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a typical amount of time for a library, or is it just, well, when you get done with it, then bring it back?
We can set parameters in the system however we want to. At this point, we've said for a month. And we also know, and this is a struggle with any library, is sometimes you might have someone come into Palette, see the cookbook library. They might be waiting for their dinner company to come or something. And they sit and they, you know, maybe screenshot a few of the recipes and so forth while they're having a drink at the bar. That's still use of the cookbook. And right. So that's, you know, that kind of use, no matter what library you are, is very hard to determine. So we have a notebook in there, which is a little old school, and, help us determine what kind of books that would be good here. If you used a book, write down which one you did and the date. You know, obviously nothing mandatory, you don't have to, but that will definitely guide. We want it to be a patron-driven, which we call it in the biz, a patron-driven collection. I don't want to have 20 books there about Cajun cooking if none of them ever get used, right?
Well, can you tweak the QR code so that even if they're just looking at it while they're sitting down and just going through it, that they could use the one-time sign up just to be able to look at it there. And that way, you know, if it's even just being looked over then, let alone checked out, like a two-tier.
Well, I mean, we could. That's really getting into the weeds.
Well, that's what we want here. Come on now. That's what we want.
Right. We do. We want to be in the
weeds. Alicia will tell you this. She needs weeds to get that thing going here.
So, love weeds.
Yeah, we've thought about a lot of different things when it comes to that. Every library will tell you, no matter what, if they have objects, in other words, not an electronic library, that you struggle with actual patron use. And so we're no different than that. And so there's going to be a little bit, things are going to fall through the cracks in terms of a person, what constitutes patron use? They opened it, looked at one recipe, or they sat for an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a struggle with any librarian. We're no different than that. So,
Alicia, was it hard in the sense for you to convince Nicole to not just help you. That's the easy part, because she was in Vietnam and it was a different time zone and she was drinking heavily. So she said, sure, let's do this. But now she's back in Las Vegas. Were you able to, because librarians are generally very low-key people. They don't like to come online or they don't like to go on in front of the camera or in front of a microphone. But here she is. So did you convince her to kind of do this together?
Well, I don't. I won't, don't want to put words in Nicole's mouth, but one sure thing I will say about Nicole is that she is Nicole is a community activist. She is very meticulous about her craft. She is very excited about cookbooks, and she's excited about community. And she loves food like I do. And she likes my food, which is awesome.
Oh,
but so I would say just those reasons alone, I didn't really think that it was going to be sort of, you know, twist her arm sort of thing. I thought that she would be excited about it because we also both love being groundbreaking people and innovators and visionaries and doing things that have never been done before. And that opportunity alone, Nicole can speak to this, which I think is very significant. Nicole's brought an immeasurable amount of legitimacy to this library. But one of the reasons why is because she was able to get us certified by the American Library Association.
Nice.
Because of her background and because of her education, you know, and because of her career, these were things that she sort of brought to us. And in the back of my mind, I thought to myself, well, if anybody can do this, it's Nicole. And so if Nicole passes, then I don't know what I'm going to do. I probably just won't do it. So thank God she said yes.
Yeah, when she said yes to the project, but also yes to coming on with you and talking about it, which is great too, because that perspective of the expertise in that area, as opposed to your culinary expertise, she's the book expertise in that sense. And how do you, and this is for both of you, how do you decide the appeal? Like, as you mentioned, you've gotten cookbooks for many chefs I mentioned in the opening as well. How do you balance it between the new cookbooks, as I would say, and the older cookbooks? For example, a Julia Child cookbook. Will it be some of that as well? Or is it all new? Or is it a mix of the two? I'll leave it up to both of you.
Nicole, you take that one.
Yes. I mean, the classics have to be respected. Part of it obviously also is driven by the donations that we've gotten. Some people have wanted to purchase the books themselves, so they went in a certain direction. I think that Palette will always be the flagship Nice Nice Bite library. They were the ones who said yes first. Mm-hmm. But if we continue to grow this, like I think that we are going to grow this, what plays in Detroit isn't maybe going to play in Vegas. What flies in Topeka, Kansas might not fly in Charleston, South Carolina. So just like libraries tweak their collections in different schools, in different communities, it will be the same here. And we will have definitely some classics. You're going to see some classics there. You're going to see what I would call a well-rounded something for everybody collection. That's really what you want to have in any library, is it needs to reflect the folks that are checking out, otherwise known as your patrons. It should reflect their interests. And again, that's what I was saying, Ira, about it being a patron-driven collection. If the folks coming into Palette aren't interested and never, ever check out the books on pizza, well, then we need to put something different there. So one thing about library collections and libraries is they are a living organism. You must weed them. Take out stuff that isn't working. You must flourish them and replant with new things that you think are going to. And you weed and you plant and you weed and you plant. And that is a constant ongoing process to keep that alive, to keep that garden alive.
Well, how do you handle the situation where someone checks out the book in good faith, of course, and they return it in good faith, but there's flour inside, you know, because they're cooking the book. Well, how do you handle that part of it?
I mean, it's kind of the cost of doing business, right? We're doing this free. We're only asking for a person's email. We're going to lose some cookbooks, Ira. We're going to, right? It's a cost of doing business. If it becomes a situation where too many items are getting lost, this is the first time anyone's done it.
Right.
Maybe we go back to the drawing board and we do something different. But at this point, we're looking at sort of a leap of faith with our fellow man, so to speak, fellow men and women. And we think that people are going to look at it for what it is. It's a free resource. It's about community. There is a social justice aspect to this that is not lost on us. And those things are important. And we're going to trust that you're going to be part of our community and bring those items back.
Is there a limitation in the sense that, let's say, somebody that's listening or watching this from out of town, they come in to visit Las Vegas, they come down to the library at Palette and they want to check out a book. Is there any geographical limitation to that? Because clearly, if they're borrowing the book, and they go back to their hometown, now how are they getting the book back there? Is there, how do you handle that situation?
I mean, we've thought about this, and one of the reasons why that location in the Downtown Arts District was very interesting to us. Alicia had already friendships established with the owners there and so forth, is that we want this to be for the Las Vegas community. Absolutely, we want tourists to look, but what we want tourists to do, Ira, is to go back to Detroit, Michigan, to go back to the Hudson Valley in New York and say, you will not believe what they have in Vegas. We need to get this here too. Mm-hmm. So that really is how we're sort of filling that space is, absolutely, we want you to look and you can clip pictures and you can do whatever you want. And I've checked the copyright laws. You can clip pictures. So don't be afraid to do that when you're sitting down with those great cookbooks at Palette or any other of our locations soon to be. But I want those folks to go back, or we want those folks to go back and say, we got to get one of these in Detroit. We've got to get one of these in Minneapolis and what have you.
So I envision, and Alicia, correct me if I'm wrong, because you both mentioned about having this same concept in various cities. Do you see yourselves as a nonprofit franchise operation in that sense, that you two are the consultants for this happening all over the United States?
I want to be very careful with language because I'm not a practicing attorney, but I do have a law degree. We want to make sure that we are protected. Obviously, that this is an idea that is fresh and new, and we want to, everybody to, enjoy the concept. Certainly, when I think about franchise, I'm thinking more of incorporating as a 501c3 and becoming, a charitable organization that people can feel free to, potentially donate funds to be able to open in various cities, or to even have private collections in certain restaurants or certain venues in their name, or maybe they were doing it for in memoriam of somebody in their family that was an important cook in their family, something of that nature. We've also been approached by the city of Henderson. The mayor's office has expressed interest in potentially having us speak with Parks and Recreations to put nice bite libraries.
Say that three times real fast, Alicia. Go ahead.
Inside various rec centers and so forth. Also, I have our friend Joe Muscaglione, who's very instrumental in Chinatown. He owns Shanghai Taste and is expanding nationally at this point. He is going to be doing a lot more in creating a visitor center in Chinatown. And one of the things that he approached me about with in the past couple of days is doing a nice bite Chinese inspired Chinatown, Asiatown inspired library at the visitor center. This is going to be a large project. The renovation and the expansion of Chinatown is a 20-year project that is slated and is being funded. And he is going to be one of the main movers and shakers of that. But just to kind of give you some examples of the scope of this and what we're seeing. But I don't want to put labels like, franchise or anything on it.
Well, that was my word. And I didn't want you to put your legal hat on. It was really...
I always have my legal hat on.
It was more the idea that you guys would be consultants to operations opening up in a nonprofit way, but to kind of replicate your model in various cities using, as Nicole said, culinary books that are about maybe that specific region. And then, but you would still come to you guys for expertise and suggestions on how to do it.
Correct.
It's that in the infrastructure as well, right? The infrastructure that Nicole has started here, I think, is significant and it's repeatable.
Right.
So through our website and through the technology and the software that she has leveraged and chosen specifically to assist us in the curation process. And the cataloging and the checkout and everything, one of the things that I think is so brilliant about what Nicole has done is that it's repeatable. So domestically, at least. Yeah.
And Nicole, there's another element that neither one of you have brought up. And it's interesting in a sense, because Nicole, you said that, the days of having the stamp in the book and signing your name and all that is gone, which I remember, of course. But will there be a digital component to these situation. So in other words, you have the physical book there, but is there a way of also having digital book available through the library system that you're creating?
I mean, we haven't gotten that far with ebooks yet. I mean, it's not out of the question for sure.
Right.
I think that for us, it was more about having it accessible and having a meeting spot for people. We want to leverage having some chefs who have written cookbooks, like my friend Alicia, coming in doing tastings possibly in places and so forth. So more of it being a communal type of event. That doesn't mean that we couldn't have something electronically, especially for people who are just interested, like you said, who are from out of town, who may not be able to access, although most public libraries do have great ebooks of cookbooks, cookbooks. So
what you mentioned earlier too, both of you, about the space involved and the shelving and all of that stuff. So how important, and don't laugh when I ask this question, but how important is the size of the book in terms of whether you're going to have that available as a lending library book? Because if you have too many thick cookbooks, then you have less other cookbooks to be able to put on those limited shelves. Oh, good. You're not laughing. Well, I like that.
No. Nicole has a formula, which I don't know why I was shocked, but she knew the amount of shelves at Palette, and she knew the size of the shelves, and she knew the average size cookbook and how many we could fit. It was like the math in her head was like, and I was like, okay.
Well, my mother used to love saying, I'm not as dumb as I look. So, it's kind of, yeah. So, yes, I mean, sure. There are varying sizes of cookbooks, but I kind of went by an average, and it wasn't a determining factor in the curation, right? It was more, and one thing we didn't mention is the way that we've kind of laser focused in on how the collection will be separated is we are going to do it by geography. And so it's going to be cuisines from North America, South, the continents. And so, and then we'll have subgenres within that. So for example, we may have Asia and, there'll be a branch that's Vietnam and Singapore and or what have you. Right. And so that's how we're going to do it. So we really didn't look at that now. That said, Ira, if we're going forward and we've got, there's a couple lovely, coffee shops that are near our neighborhood out here in Henderson, and they're very pink. And I would love, they don't have a lot of space. I've kind of scoped out everywhere I go now. I go, there could be a cookbook library there. But that would be something where maybe you would do 50 books. And that would be the cap of what they could actually, have. So all these things would factor into it. That pink coffee shop that we all know that has great locations, starts with an L. That would be great to have. There's a whole genre of books that are called unicorn food or anything that's pink, because this place is just a pink coffee shop. And so I'm not
going to. Which is why you'll never find me in that place. So
okay. Right. But yeah. I mean, it just would go with the decor and the food would be, and it was just like, I've already mapped it out in my head. They just have to say yes. But so we will tailor depending, if you've got, a hunting and fishing lodge, that's an Airbnb and you want to have a library collection in there, you can, we can do some grilling of fish and wild game cookbooks. I mean, the sky's the limit here of how you can curate it. And I think going back to the earlier question about the using that franchise word is you tell us what you want and we'll come up with what we think and present that to you. So
I stepped in when I said franchise. I know she put her hat on and we went down the tubes on that one.
You said weeds are okay. You said weeds.
When we said that, I mentioned size of the book, but I also didn't mention weight of the book. So, I mean, is that a factor at all in a sense of on a practical level, depending on who your customer base is? If you have too heavy of a book, do they want to take that home? The technical terms, do they want to schlep that home as opposed to a lighter book where they can definitely put it in the bag and take it home?
Well, I think we would just have to leave that to the patron. I think they would know what they're capable of schlepping.
Okay, fair enough. I should have said patron, not customer. Yes, they're right. It's patron. Yes. Exactly. And do you see, once this catches on, which I think it will no doubt catch on, that you're going to find a lot more chefs that even Alicia doesn't know, that will be contributing books that they have. And it may even be books that they didn't write, but it's in their family from a generation ago, but it would still apply in terms of the recipes.
We've received inquiries from, what was the latest one, Nicole from Ireland, reaching out that are finding us, that are saying, hey, do you want my cookbook?
See, yeah,
Two Hats Pizza in Cork, Ireland, reached out on Instagram and sent us two of their cookbooks. And as far as, you know, I know that'll be our first international location. No, I don't know.
I like
just
it.
Remake.
The most important question is, where do you house the books that you haven't yet curated or are waiting for space at Palette?
I wouldn't be having guests over into my dining room right now. I've got a little bit of everything everywhere. So, I have stacks. I'm curating. I keep switching book. Now I pull that one out. So library science is 50% art, 50% science. And so, Alicia's husband is a great, wonderful, famous painter, Mark.
She mentioned him in our last interview. I know she doesn't.
Oh, did she? Everybody loves Mark, right? Yeah. Of course, I had to pitch you. So I'm painting. I'm painting right now. So there, most things are on two long foldable tables, and I'm moving them in spots that I want them to be in.
The other thing you mentioned about, and Alicia, you did about Henderson, I think it was that you mentioned at least that the city of Henderson was interested. I would think too that a lot of governmental entities, local municipalities in various areas, once they hear about this, will like that idea, even though it may be located in a commercial setting, such as a little restaurant or grocery store or whatever it happens to be, because it does have an appeal at a very community level. That's the whole idea of it. So I think you're going to get more and more inquiries as people hear about this and see how it flourishes.
Well, it is. And there's, I also don't underestimate, other charities wanting to partner. Think of like big brothers, big sisters, Girl Scouts of America, appealing to the youth, different types of charitable organizations, the Salvation Army, Goodwill of Southern Nevada. There are numerous other entities that have a mission that is carved out that might be a very, very small part of their mission, but they realize that we could potentially fill a hole and help them achieve their mission. And in those particular cases, we're an open door at this point. We want to be able to do those things as long as we have sufficient inventory and potential donations to be able to fund those libraries to the point where we feel, they're ready for the public. We're all for that. So, yeah, I agree with you, Ira. I think that it's going to take off for sure.
And the last question before I let both of you go on the opening, which is August 2nd, is the public invited to come down?
Yes. So if you RSVP, please, you do need to RSVP in advance, and you can email us at nicebite@gmail.com, or you can contact us. A lot of people message us on Instagram. So we have a running guest list that's getting quite large. But yes, if you are interested in attending, it's going to be from 4 to 5 p.m. Our ceremonial ribbon cutting ceremony is also going to be attended by the president of the Arts District, and District 8, and hopefully, you know, some local politicians as well, and some people that are just sort of behind the effort. In addition to some media, we'll be there, and then a bunch of friends, family, and culinary enthusiasts. So we hope that you can come too, Ira. We'd love to see you there.
I'll be down there. And then I think instead of a ribbon cutting, I'd like to see a cake cutting, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's going to be up to Sterling Buckley, the executive chef at Palette. He is going be putting out some nice, nice bites on behalf of Palette. So we're very grateful for that. We're going to be serving complimentary Prosecco. So
I'm definitely coming. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a great way to leave.
I mean, even though there's not beer.
Yeah. That's a great way to leave it. My guests have been Chef Alicia Chevatone and librarian Dr. Nicole Beer, and they're launching America's first cookbook lending library in Las Vegas on August the 2nd. The library will be located inside Palette, Las Vegas, in downtown Las Vegas. And for everything about the cookbook lending library, go to nicenicebite.com, nicenicebite.com, and you can follow them on Instagram, X, and YouTube. And Alicia, Nicole, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Ira.
See you next time. Thank you.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. When you